Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 137. This is Kevin DeFrango. Sitting beside me is Ken Phillips. What's happening, good sir?
Not much, Kevin. Just back at it again. We took a week off for the 4th of July holiday there.
Yeah, I would say that our break was a little more planned than the break I had for the regular show.
Oh.
The one for the regular show was unexpected. This one, for us, not so unexpected. Did you stay in town?
Oh, for the 4th. Yeah, the we fourth? Did stay in town. We watched the parade there in Bexley that they have every year. My daughter filled up on, well, she didn't really fill up on candy. She just collected massive amounts of candy. I mean, if you could see her, the way she approached it was like it was literally her job. Like, she was out there to, like, maximize candy collection in the time that she was there spent. You know, she would wave to the people to get their attention, you know. She had it all down. So, and she had, like, a big box of candy at the end of it. But, unfortunately, with her braces, she's not able to eat most of it. But
Yeah, that's a little tough.
That's the irony of the candy this year.
But I guess you could always just look forward to it, put it away, and say, "I can't wait until these bad girls come off."
Yeah, I think she's doing that with some of her kind of more favored types of candy. She's going to keep those around until she's able to actually enjoy them. So,
smart plan.
Looking forward to that. Were you in town for the 4th?
Yeah. We found out, like, Kia would not have made it in life to December had we moved in here in July instead of August.
Oh, really?
We had the one neighbor shooting fireworks for 3 consecutive hours.
Oh.
Or no, 2 hours and 45 minutes. They stopped at about 11:45 p.m.
Thank God you corrected yourself, Kevin, because we
yeah, they started at 9. Been... They took a they didn't take a complete break. Like, you can actually see the Gahanna fireworks from just about half a block down from the house.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone's in the neighborhood's pretty much just out on the street watching the fireworks. And these people were still setting off fireworks, even though there was a large city display going on at the very same moment. That is how many fireworks they had, too. Like, it was very consistent for nearly 3 hours. Kia would have had a heart attack and died had we moved here in July. She really hated fireworks, and that would have been the worst. Like, she didn't like it around the condo, and...
What?
There was not that level of activity around the condo.
What, so, like, what kind of caliber of fireworks would you say these were?
Oh, like, they were firing well into the air and making kind of larger firework display, like, explosions.
So they're like the mortar kind of fireworks, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah, because I did find a number of them in my front lawn when I mowed it the following day.
That's nice.
So, you know, these things happen, I suppose, when your neighbors set up. The fact that I only found, like, maybe 3 in the yard was somewhat surprising, considering the breadth of their firework use.
Yeah, but you would think, in theory, you should have received zero debris in your yard under most, you know, what you would hope for. But
I would expect more, to be completely honest, considering that level of work they put in. And I don't even want to know how much they spent on those bad boys.
That's what I was going to say. How much money would you think you would spend on that? Now, sometimes they have, like, deals where you can, like, buy one, get one free or something like that at these fireworks places, so...
Oh,
I think in a way they kind of encourage massive purchases. Big Fireworks is out there trying to, like, they know that people aren't going to be buying fireworks, you know, every day of the year, probably. I feel like they're trying to maximize
they're real pushers around sales. The fourth.
Yeah, they get really, they try to get you in there.
Well, it's just kind of funny. It's one of those things that I just really haven't bothered with since I used fireworks to be destructive. Like, I don't think I really liked fireworks. I think I liked to blow things up when I was younger. Because I remember you couldn't buy them in Pennsylvania, so you always had to have someone make a run to Ohio to get said fireworks. I don't know if you had, but I remember doing that, and my buddy Sean and I, we had M80s the one time, and they had just paved the road near his house, so we stuck an M80 in the fresh,
oh my God,
black top. To see what it would do. And all it did was smoke through the blacktop.
Okay.
It did not really do any damage.
That's good. Because I would imagine that people would have been kind of pissed if you blew up the freshly laid road.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't put down like a bunch of them. We only used one.
Well, yeah.
Like, we didn't put a whole pack in there. But still, I don't know why we were handling that level of firework either, to be completely honest with you. Like, there are so many times where I'm like, I can't believe I didn't lose something over my childhood.
First of all, I love your defense of, well, we only put, you know, some explosives
some
in there.
Some explosives in there.
I mean, we could have put more. I mean, you got to give us credit there.
You do need to give us a little bit of credit. We weren't trying to completely mess up their work,
I
guess.
We put some explosives in the road. Yeah. You do get some credit, I'd say.
Yeah, well, it's not like... I do remember one of our friends' infamous stories of putting them in a... pop machine, supposedly, and blowing it up.
Why does this sound familiar?
Because one of our friends did it, supposedly, in the fine city of Altoona, Pennsylvania. It is a mutual friend that I am choosing to leave nameless.
This wasn't a friend who was known for telling stories,
No. He was not telling... This one was not in the habit of telling stories.
All right. Just had to clear that up.
No, but...
because there was the one friend of ours who played for the U.S. men's beach volleyball team in the Olympics, if you remember.
No, it wasn't beach volleyball. It was just volleyball.
Oh, just volleyball? Okay, so...
Yeah, before he blew out his knee.
Right. So that wasn't the same person, just making sure.
No. Okay. Different person. I would have actually believed this person.
So your
story.
I'm trying to picture this though. Somebody was first of all. There's a Coke machine that somebody owns, I suppose.
I believe it was on the high school grounds or just off of the high school grounds.
Okay, and then somebody broke into it.
No, they put them on like where the pop comes out.
They put the M80 inside there.
Yeah, well, several.
Okay, so we are not going to give these guys any credit in this
story. No credit is being given. Of course, I don't think they wanted credit in that department either from the telling of this tale. They purposely were trying to extract beverages from said machine.
I don't know, man. That seems pretty risky there. It's like a high risk reward scenario, low reward, really. I mean, you just go home and look in your couches, and you'll probably find some change to be able to buy yourself a soda. You know, I don't know. I don't think it's that crazy to
Ken gone full Ohio and calling it soda.
That's right. I used to call it pop, but I've assimilated. I've become part of the collective.
I'm hanging tough with the pop. Hanging tough with that one. I've had a lot of PA-isms beaten out of me, but that one has persisted.
Pop for life.
It does not hurt.
Pop for life.
It does not hurt that the wife also says the same thing because her family is from central Pennsylvania also.
Yeah, it
was... So they're one of the few Ohioans, and I would call them definitely Ohioans, that say pop still.
Although they have maintained that, you know, not to talk too much about your lovely wife's family, but they have maintained their Pennsylvania culture, could you say? In terms of, you know, fandom and... Oh. You know, pronunciation, I suppose. So it's kind of an interesting.
Yeah, they definitely have the Penn State fandom that has slowly not aggravated me as much, although they're just kind of ridiculous. They're like, you know, they can go off the reservation a little bit sometimes. You know, I feel like I try to keep my fandom within a realm of the reasonable.
Yeah, you wouldn't try to, like, pick fights with, I don't know, Bengals fans, necessarily. Oh, Kevin, this reminds me of another...
There was no need to do that when we went down there.
This is a topic that I wish I had put into our list, but you had texted me about seeing a Rod Woodson jersey...
Oh, right.
For sale.
No, it wasn't for sale.
Oh,
someone was wearing it. But it still struck me as interesting because I feel like Rod Woodson was well before the Scherzi days.
Well.
Especially in a Steelers uniform.
If I can be honest here and maybe, you know, make myself a little vulnerable, this is really the first I've heard of a Scherzi. Now, I've probably seen them before and just not... Oh. Put it together that there's a word for that, and they're called jerseys. But I did a little bit of research after your text there, and educated myself a little.
Yeah, jerseys have been around for quite some time at this juncture.
Yeah,
because I feel like I don't know if I had one in high school or not. But I know that I got a Penguins one at some juncture. I definitely have an Evgeny Malkin, a couple of Evgeny Malkin jerseys.
I would say that, though, the hockey, you know, jersey is probably one of the more, like, cool looks, I guess, outside of the stadium to wear. Like, because I feel like the jersey... It makes sense because, like, you don't want to wear, like, a jersey all the time.
Oh, right.
So, like, this is probably remedial for most people, but I'm just kind of grasping my, wrapping my head around this this concept. But at the same time, do you think it's still frowned upon to wear a jersey to a game? Are you supposed to wear your jersey to the game? What's the etiquette on that?
Oh, I guess I don't really care.
Okay.
In a lot of ways, like, it was peculiar because it was at a baseball game.
Okay.
So he was not in support of anyone. And the Pirate, and it was not, we were at a Dayton Dragons game. So it wasn't even the opposing team was Tampa's farm team. So there was no Pittsburgh connection to be had whatsoever.
Okay.
He was one of those people that I always wonder about when I go to games. It's like, why did you wear that when it doesn't involve either of the team that are involved in the game that you're attending? Like, I'm just I'm confused by those people.
Well, this leads me down a further rabbit hole, actually, because I wanted to get to this point at some point. But so when you're going to a concert, right, like,
oh,
it's considered not cool to, like, wear the T-shirt of the band you're going to see. At least that's the cliche, you know?
Yeah, I think that used to be the case. It's not really the case anymore.
Okay, good.
You know, just because people are like, support... Because I definitely, to me, like, the biggest one for me is the stigma of wrestling t-shirts. Like, that's one of those things that I've got to admit, I was probably one of the last people to hold out on doing that. But now I have, like, a half dozen wrestling t-shirts or something like that. Wait, maybe
so what's
eight
the,
of them.
What's the stigma of wrestling t-shirts?
Well, you know, you always got the, we always got the questions where it was like, you know, that's fake, right? And it's just like, holy fuck. Yeah, we know it's fake. Do you know that Game of Thrones is fake, motherfucker?
They're like, what?
But Game of Thrones is probably an inaccurate statement. I should have said something like, you know that ER is fake too, right? To make it more time appropriate. Because I do feel like that question has gone by the wayside for the most part too. Like, everyone is in on the gig at this point, except for maybe children, that it's fake. You know what I mean? Right. Like, because even after, like, it was sometime during our childhood that it was pretty apparent that they were, you know, it was fake. Because, I mean, I kind of remember having a Santa Claus moment realizing that.
You realize that there? Did you realize that there was no Santa Claus the same day that you realized that wrestling was fake?
No, I'm just saying that it was a similar moment in that there's that epiphany of, oh my god, something that I've believed in for so long is now found out to be a sham. My world is in shambles. Kind of a situation going on. I guess I don't particularly remember my Santa moment, but I don't really remember when that happened with wrestling, but I do
you can remember the feeling.
Yeah, I can remember the general feeling, because I do remember. Oh, well, I remember one thing that kind of set it off. Like, I always remember that Hacksaw Jim Duggan and the Iron Sheik got caught smoking pot together.
Oh, scandal.
And yeah, it was like when they were fighting each other and they were just ready to come to the Jaffa Mosque when they used to do such a thing in the fine city of Altoona, Pennsylvania.
That's crazy. I guess they were not as big back then.
But yeah. It was on the news. Like, I felt like they got caught in Pennsylvania somewhere. Which is why it was on the news.
You know what? That's funny you said, because you mentioned that, and it just popped in my head to remember. I can remember this being like a buzzy item at homeroom at St. Mary's. I remember people talking about this. the news was spreading of what was it? Hacksaw Jim Duggan and
the Iron Sheik.
Yeah, that's funny.
Mortal enemies caught smoking the reefer, man.
Disgracing themselves and the good name of wrestling.
Oh man. I guess to way go back to the Scherzi thing.
Oh sure.
Like I've kind of been at this point for a while that I'm not a big fan of anything on the back of my shirt.
Okay.
It just, you know, in general, like, I guess if it's like a dress shirt and there's a pattern on the back, that's, to me, that's something different. Like, if there's wording or something like that, I'm not that big of a fan of those. You know, so Scherzi is something that I kind of shy away from. Like, I know my parents got me the Malkin ones, and I do wear them on occasion. But I probably wear them less frequently than other Penguins gear that I have, I would say, in general, just because of that kind of general feeling that I have. And I hate, that was one thing too, to tie it in with the wrestling shirts. It's one thing I hated about the wrestling, a lot of wrestling shirts. They had something on the back. Like, the WWE always felt the need to put something on the back. I'm like, no, just make it look, like, if I get a print t-shirt usually, it's just something on the front, you know? It's not on both sides.
Right. It reminds me of, like, those Big Dog t-shirts. I don't know. I can remember seeing those all over the place. And
yeah.
It just is a little not as classy, maybe, it seems like, is kind of the vibe that kind of gives off. I don't know. I think I see what you're saying about the writing on the back.
Yeah, no matter what it is, I'm just not really that big of a fan. And I guess I always think, too, about the why do you have a name on the back of your on your own back? It seems weird to put your own name on any. Definitely would be weird on a jersey, but just on a jersey is kind of weird too. Like, custom.
Yeah, well, I'm guessing that the situation we're dealing with was a customized jersey that someone purchased for themselves with Rod Woodson's number on it and name.
Yeah, and that was the other thing. Like, if they did exist when he was playing for the Steelers, there is no way that guy is wearing that thing right now.
Yeah.
Like, it had to have been one of those customized... And I mean, that I guess that is kind of the cool thing about things just being easily accessible like that now. Because I feel like that was the other thing that's kind of changed with the WWE shop itself. Not that I've really gone there myself, but you can customize your shirt now. Like, that was the other thing that was annoying about wrestling shirts is they were all black.
Yeah.
Like, and I remember even when I was going to concerts during when I was at Kent and I went to a shit ton of them, like, I'm like, all of my concert shirts are black, man. Like, this is kind of getting a little, like, I even remember then getting a little burnt out. I remember getting a Descendants t-shirt that was blue just for the express purpose that they had a Keller other than blue or other than black,
right,
in their roster of t-shirts. I'm like, oh, thank fucking God.
Yeah, that's a good point. I feel like black is such a safe color that people kind of, you know, can wear with just about anything.
It's
nice to break out a little bit.
Yeah, I like to have a little bit more of a variety. So that, but again, like, the WWE is to the point where you can customize shirt color now if you want to. So even that part of things where being annoyed about that, you can't really do it because, you know, it's out there. Like, you can customize stuff even on a, you know, a major kind of manufacturer's site like that.
Right.
Which is pretty fucking cool, man. And I mean, a lot of people offer different colors. Because I remember the Joey Janela shirt that I got, I really liked it. It was in white. But it kind of took a little bit longer to come in because there's a black and a white one, and I thought the white one looked pretty gangster.
Well, that's cool. It was funny. I was just talking to my wife at dinner, and she was saying that men never buy clothes online, and
all of the t-shirts that I've gotten you over the years for Christmases have been online purchases.
Yeah.
Well, I shouldn't say all of them. I would say a vast majority of them have been online.
And a wrestling shirt or, you know, a t-shirt, I guess. But beside a t-shirt, would you, like, go look for pants online at any point?
No. Yeah. Like, I don't know why, but it is kind of easy just to hit Kohl's real quick. It's usually Kohl's.
Yeah. Let's be honest. It's usually Kohl's.
There's the reason I have a Kohl's card.
This episode is not sponsored by Kohl's, we should say.
That would be pretty nice to be sponsored by Kohl's.
We're
going to get another 5% off our purchase or extra five Kohl's bucks.
I feel like that would have been a pretty nice segue to lead into if we had been sponsored by Kohl's. But sadly, no. can't claim credit for that being on purpose. But yeah. Anyway, pants. Go to Kohl's.
Yes, pants. Yes or no?
Of course, we don't wear pants when we record these episodes. We're both wearing shorts tonight, actually. Technically speaking.
Yeah, I am not really wearing pants tonight. But speaking of some people that don't normally wear pants,
That's true.
And they wear their own shorts. Soccer players.
That's right, Kevin.
We are fond of talking a little bit of soccer, usually from a statistical viewpoint.
Yeah, and it's kind of a little bit, a technical viewpoint at least.
And this one, the question hovers around the Women's World Cup. because the article came out before that. But it is certainly something that was a debate during the hockey playoffs recently. There was a lot of talk about instant replay and why goals were taken away and why penalties weren't necessarily assessed. There were any number of questionable reviews in hockey. And the Women's World Cup was no stranger.
Well, just to pile on
to moments of weirdness
at the Kentucky Derby this year, I believe there was a controversial outcome.
Hey, yeah, and that was done on replay because there was some minor foul that people like. I guess I didn't look that much into it, but yeah, I mean, it's another example of the.
Yeah, I believe one of the horses did a lane violation, like moved in front of another horse and blocked their progress.
Right.
And then that horse ended up winning. But the controversy is that the horse that was blocked was not the horse that ended up winning the race. So in other words, like the horse that won ended up benefiting from the block in a way.
Oh, okay.
So it doesn't quite seem like justice in that way. Necessarily either, even if that horse did block the other rider.
Does
that make sense?
Right.
So I don't know. That seems like an un... All right. I guess I would say, like, in basically all these cases, they just need to clarify these rules a little bit better. And, like, I think give some leeway in some cases.
Yeah, because they call it video assisted review in soccer, but
right,
all of them kind of have this similar theme. I feel like all these sports where this one they used the example of France against Nigeria, I believe. Yeah, Nigeria. Where they found out there was a penalty kick awarded to France, and the woman went to take it, and she ended up hitting it off the post. You know, the goalie didn't, the keeper didn't make the save, but it went off the post, and Nigeria's like, ah, we're still in this game.
Because they stopped the penalty kick.
Yeah, because the penalty kick got stopped. And I think that France was only up 1-0 at that point, so it's, you know, it's a game. Well, the video assistive review there went back and looked at it and saw that the keeper's heels had come up slightly off of the touchline, and that's why they had France re-kick. And they ended up converting that time.
Yeah.
And that kind of put Nigeria in a bad spot. Now, Nigeria did end up going into the knockout round because this was during round robin play. So it didn't hurt them that much, honestly.
Well, the thing is, though, that hurt her foot coming off the line did not impact the play one way or the other.
Yeah, and I feel like every sport has had that moment here now, because there was one where in the NHL playoffs, I think it's Gabriel Landeskog was going off the ice.
Okay.
And literally, like, at least half of his body is on the bench. Like, his right skate is on the bench area, but his left skate is still on the ice, and they ended up calling the play offsides, even though his skate being there had nothing to do... Well, and it hurt that it was offsides because Colorado scored a goal to either go up a goal or to tie the game, I think. It was one of the two. They called him offsides.
Wow.
And it was one of those, and then there was another game later where San Jose had a hand pass, and it was clear as day, but somehow the referees didn't catch it, and they weren't allowed to replay, go in and look at it on replay, so it was left to stand. Like, and those are just kind of two examples of, well, I guess, no, I shouldn't have mixed those examples. Because the skate on the ice was just such a minor infraction that had nothing to do with the play. Kind of like the Nigerian goalie's heels coming up off of the line.
Right.
Like, it has nothing to do with the play. Like, why is it getting called?
Yeah, just for the sake of, you know, expedience, you know, just to keep the game moving.
Well, and it always seems like, too, where the rule started because this one guy was clearly offsides. Like, and it was, at least in the NHL.
Okay.
You know, it was several years ago.
Like when you're coming in on from the bench?
No, not when you're coming in from the bench. This is just when you're entering your offensive zone and you need to be on sides.
Oh, okay.
He was like two or three strides ahead of the puck carrier.
Okay.
And he ends up scoring a goal and everyone freaks out about it. So they add, and they couldn't at the time, they couldn't replay it.
Oh, okay.
But ever since then, it's been like, kind of, you know, again, to go back to the goalie, like, barely having their heels off the line, like, most of the times, people are just barely, and I mean barely, offsides.
Right.
Like,
when the replay is coming into effect.
But the replay is coming into effect. And, yeah, so if people are complaining about it in soccer, they're complaining about it in hockey, they're complaining about it in basketball, and baseball really isn't any different either, I don't think.
I don't know. It's a tough call. I'm not sure. Like, for some reason, I'm reminded of playing Dungeons and Dragons, you know, being the dungeon master. Like, you're supposed to know all the rules, what to do in different situations that come up. And it is kind of a real vibe killer to, like, have to, like, stop and, like, look up the rules and, like, figure out, like, what is supposed to happen, you know?
Right.
And it's a similar situation with the instant replay. And, like, I feel like a much better solution would be to just sort of fly by the seat of your pants and try to come up with something that seems reasonable, you know, rather than going to find the exact right rule. And maybe that's a similar thing with sports, where people can be probably a little bit more open to, like, having a reasonable result that seems okay.
Well, but yeah, it's so weird because there's just, and I guess this is where I can group the hand pass that I was trying to talk about earlier. That was one of those ones that it was so egregious and so obvious. Like, it was like, how did this not get called?
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't allowed to look at it. It's kind of like at New Orleans and the Rams, where the Rams' defensive back, like, pushed down the wide receiver, essentially.
Okay, yeah, I think I remember that play.
And all the New Orleans fans are freaking out about it. Like, it's so weird to me that I do kind of agree that it seems like these replays happen too frequently. But then I don't know how it simultaneously there ends up being these big plays that change momentum that get let go. Yeah. In the case of San Jose, they actually won the game. It was a hand pass in the offensive zone. It went directly to the guy who scored the game-winning goal. Like, I mean, it literally led to the win. Like, it's not even one of those, like, he batted it with his hand, someone passed it, and then, made a play and then passed it, and then someone had to shoot it to go in. Like, it was like bang, bang, and it's just like, yeah. You know, I that's what's so weird to me, like, and just in sports in general, like, how did that, like, I don't know how that play in that, you know, Rams-Saints game went uncalled. I'm like, Like, that's getting flagged, right? And then, like, like, I don't care about either team. Like, fuck both of them as far as I was concerned. You know, I was just watching it because it's, you know, one of the last football games on.
Right.
And, I was semi-outraged by the fact that the referee, like, I don't know how you can have, like, 10 people or 11 people on a field and no one sees something like that. And that's where the thing with, at least with soccer to me, and it's kind of this way with hockey, where they have four people on there. If hockey has four people, but only the referees can call stuff. And it's a similar setup in soccer, where there's the referee and then there's the two assistants that keep track of the offsides. And then there's the third person that keeps track of the fourth person that keeps track of the time.
Gotcha.
But only the referee can call penalties in that case. Like, I don't understand why they just don't give expanded authority to some of the extra people that are on the ice or on the field, you know, in soccer's case. Because, like, the linesmen in the NHL do the same thing where they're just calling offsides or icing. Like, they have a very narrow view, and it's just like, I don't understand why in sometimes, like, they have a set of eyes. Like, they're training to be refs. Like, I don't understand why they don't get used in these discussions more often.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's kind of crazy, too, though, but, and this problem happened in football to me, is that sometimes even when, like, all of the referees huddled, it was just like, hold on, how did this decision still get fucked up?
Right, it doesn't help.
Like, yeah, that didn't even help. It's just like, I don't know what the solution is at this point. Like, I used to be one of those, like, really pro-replay, but, yeah, to me it is getting a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
Of where it's getting pushed to at this point. And again, like, in all the sports, like, I've named examples, I think, in, like, every major sport at this juncture.
Well, it's bad when you're dealing with, I think, video replay directly. Now, I don't know if you've ever followed or watched much tennis, but they have a replay system where they're able to basically reconstruct where the ball is and show, like, a 3D model of the ball and, like, where it hits on a 3D, you know, model of the court.
Yeah.
And to me, like, that is the ideal situation for instant replay because it's clear cut. It shows you where the ball, you know, literally where it hit, if it's inbounds or out of bounds. And it clears up a lot of problems and very quickly, I think, is the key.
Yeah.
If they could now, it's tennis, I think, and in volleyball too, but I think those sports are unique because there's a lot less contact with the ball. Like, you can kind of get a good trajectory for the ball easily. Like, it's not like changing directions a lot.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that's not really at the
quickly, if you know what I mean, like, when it's going to go out of bounds, in other words.
Yeah, and that's not a lot of the examples that I made. That's not at the heart of those problems. Like, it wasn't like, oh, we thought the goal was going to go in, but it didn't go in because of a handball that didn't get called, you know, like,
or someone stepped on the out of bounds line, you know, and on the field sideline for football, you know, you could see that in instant replay pretty easily, usually.
So, like, it's easy, I guess. It works in tennis because there is, like, a very, like you said, like, there's a path, you can track it, you know, go for it. But, like, yeah, some calls are kind of subjective. Like, when Drew Brees was throwing that pass, it had nothing to do with what the penalty was, you know? Like, great, you can track where Drew Brees' throw was going. Fantastic. Like, I mean, I guess you could use that of he couldn't have caught the ball, but
what if you had, like, motion tracking on every player on the field? Then you could say, you know, replay exactly and remodel all the players, see it from any angle. I don't know.
We it'd be interesting to do
see through that... players, you know. I don't know if it's possible. That would be that would solve some problems, I guess. So somebody out there listening to this can get to work on that. That would be nice. Can't be that hard, right? I mean, they've been using motion tracking for a long time in the movies. What, Lord of the Rings was 2001?
I guess it'd be kind of interesting to see how they...
friggin' almost 20 years ago, dude.
Oh, yeah, don't even get me started with that. That's bullshit again. There's too much stuff. But, yeah, I think some of the... well, no, less of the players, I think, are hesitant about that stuff now. But, you know, in a contact sport, well, in hockey or football, like, that'd be really tough to wear. Like, you'd really have to make it durable. Yeah. And it'd really have to be just kind of innate to some of their equipment, I would think.
It must be part of the jerseys or helmets or something. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, you couldn't just, you know, put all the balls all over them to track motion that well.
Yeah, there'd have to be some adjustments, I'm sure. And then some sensors on the ball as well, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, but I do know that there are kind of some tracking technologies that people are starting to use in those sports.
I feel like football is maybe behind the times when it comes to other sports, and I'm not sure exactly why, but it seems like baseball has been getting better with their data collection, and basketball, I think, maybe it seems like is the leaders in that kind of area. So I don't know. Hopefully football can work out some of their problems, but I haven't heard as much about replays in basketball, Kevin. I don't think we've mentioned that. Now, I don't follow basketball too much, but...
Yeah, and I've got to admit, I'm kind of light in my basketball watching. But I feel like it was mentioned in this article in The Atlantic. Okay. Yeah. 'Cause I think that they were kind of talking about the same thing that I was. That it's just not... this isn't just a... soccer problem per se, which was, you know, it starts because of that. And it was kind of funny, they in this article they were worried about the video assisted replay becoming a factor in the U.S. Holland matchup for the championship. And at least for a moment it seemed like it might fall into that category, because there was a replay. It was pretty clear, though, that the woman kicked the other woman square in the chest.
Ooh.
While she had possession. So I thought that was pretty clear cut, that she did something wrong. But, you know, there might have been a little bit of question about it. I you know, it's kind of hard to say exactly all the time.
Right.
But the U.S. ended up tacking on a second goal not long after that. So that kind of made it a little bit easier to deal with. And again, like, it's one of those situations where, again, this article's kind of bitching about a minor infraction being corrected rather than a major mistake, like what seemed to happen. Like, and again, just because the referee can't be everywhere, you know, you might not always have a good angle. Like, there's both in hockey and soccer, there's a lot of running around that the referee has to do.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot be out of shape at all. They do a lot of skating and or running.
That's why they need the motion capture, Kevin. They can be everywhere in the field at once that way. Who knows if that would even fix it? I don't know. This could just be a human problem, you know. We get the better technology to be able to analyze things, and then it's like when you really, like... I don't know, when you like really try to define something, like you find that it's a lot harder to define it than what you thought it was, you know?
Well, yeah, and it's kind of funny, again, like You always think of these egregious examples of when things go bad, but then when people get the use of this technology, they start kind of, again, like, they start nitpicking. Because even most of the times with the hockey offsides calls, like, it's the opposing team that calls it.
Mm-hmm.
And when your team gets it right, you're kind of happy about it still, because then someone usually loses a goal. You know,
that helps you out a little bit.
But still, just in general, it's
it's
pretty chintzy, man. Like, even though it does benefit the Pens from time to time, like, in general, it's kind of funny though, because if you left it open, like, oh, you don't always need to call that. Like, if you think it was incidental to, would it be incidental to the play? I don't know if I'm looking for the right word, but if it didn't have any bearing on the play.
Yeah, immaterial maybe.
Yeah, if it's immaterial to the play, like, you don't need to call it. But then people would probably be howling about when it doesn't get called, you know what I mean? Like, I think that there's going to be an inherent problem one way or the other.
I feel like people are just not okay with uncertainty or a gray area, you know? There's just going to be some gray areas at times in life. But people feel like there needs to be a right call, a right answer. And I felt that way too. But, you know, you get some experience and you start to realize that there's just times when you don't know, you know? And I think for the enjoyment of sports, it's in those cases, it's just better to move on quickly and just say, well, whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's why I kind of had to laugh. This is something that it wasn't one of our topics per se, but I remember reading some Seattle Seahawks fans still being pissed about that Super Bowl.
No, boy.
And I'm just, that was another one where it's been like, no, it's been more than 10 years. Because, like, Brian used to live in Columbus.
Right, that's a while ago.
Yeah, or maybe it was just 10 years ago. Maybe it was 2009. You know, Seattle fans still being pissed about that. Like, some people hold on to some grudges for a long ass time, man.
Oh,
I can't think of a situation that I'm still pissed about that's a decade old. Like, I might have held on to being pissed about something for a couple of years, but
it was actually 2006.
Breaking
news here. Of course, yeah, played after the 2005 season. But so what? That's
it's the 15th
anniversary coming up here.
Yeah, 13 years at this point. Just like, fucking get over it, man. Jesus Christ.
Even longer than we thought.
Yeah.
But that's right. So I guess, Kevin, we can guarantee that people will be bitching about this. Even in tennis, people do complain. There was a recent point in Wimbledon, I think, that was controversial, where a ball appeared to go out, but it was marked as in by the shot assistant that they have there. So it's nothing's perfect. And that technology is only advertised to be accurate to within 3 millimeters. So there you go. If you're happy with that kind of gray area, then you're gonna have to deal with it.
3 millimeters.
Nothing is perfect.
Fucking close.
It is pretty close.
Well, Ken, we may have found the perfect monkey for our show.
Yeah, this could be the perfect topic. Even I'm not sure. But when I saw this headline, I knew that...
Of course the New York Post would provide us with this fine coverage of a white-faced sake in the Korosari Zoo in Finland.
Yeah.
And...
The article headline, "Insanely Muscular Monkey Spotted in Finland."
Yeah, I thought that they were...
Oh, this is from Fox News, actually. It's just republished, it looks like.
Oh, anywho. Okay. Well, no wonder the headline isn't that big then, or that bad then, because I feel the Sigourney Weaver post from the New York Post was a little, I felt like sensationalized.
Not good.
This one, spot on, I would say. Provided this picture is, this monkey is real, it is insanely muscular.
Check. It does appear to have been spotted in Finland, so that's point two from the article headline.
Yeah, and considering it's part of a zoo, I don't quite understand why this is the first time this has been put out there.
Well, that's right. I wanted to make a little bit of an issue and to say that, can you really say that it was spotted, quote unquote, if it's at a zoo in an exhibit? I mean, I don't know. I guess you could say like you spotted the exit sign on the freeway or something, even though that's like out there in plain sight.
Yeah, I think when you're talking about animals, it infers that this is the first time like
you had to like hike your way through a jungle to be able to find this species. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's an inherent problem. When you say you're spotting a sign, I guess I feel like that makes sense when you say that.
Right.
I haven't spotted a speed sign. Well, no, I guess I wouldn't really say it about a speed sign.
You might spot a car or a model of car or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of things that you could spot. I don't know why it's all driving related, but I feel like
it does seem more driving related than anything else.
I think if you're going to spot something, you're probably driving. I don't know. It's that just seems like a weird bit of vocabulary there. It's only car related. But, or when you refer to an animal, you can refer to an animal or like say a whale or a dolphin, you know, you were spot or birds, you know, these are things that you can spot.
Yeah, you can spot them. But again, like because it's referring to an animal, you're usually out on a hike.
Right.
You've busted out some binoculars for some birds.
You're out in nature somewhere.
You're out in nature. Yeah. So I agree with you. When you say spot and it's at a zoo.
Yeah.
But yeah, that again leads me back to my question. How the fuck did this go under the radar for this long? Like we've talked about recently about how people Instagram everything. Like how is this not a viral Instagram post before now? Like I am so confused by that. Like someone in Finland went to that zoo and found that monkey completely freakish before this person did.
I feel like this particular picture is just outstanding in terms of facial expression on this monkey. Like, I'm not sure if that monkey is always giving that kind of facial expression.
Yeah, I think some people might call that a resting bitch face.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
They did point out that despite the fact that it is called white masked, this is a female.
Yes.
And that it only refers to the male species.
Yes, the male
that has white, because the female, as you will notice in this picture, does not indeed have a white face.
Yeah, and I'm just going through a little image gallery here of white faced Saki monkeys, and they are somewhat muscular, I'd say, in general. But, this one in the article is maybe particularly...
Yeah, I think that all primates like that look pretty... Is it a primate? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's
They all seem kind of muscular. Yeah. I guess gorillas always top it out because they're fucking huge.
That's a, you know, little baby monkeys are always cute.
Yep.
But these all look somewhat muscular, I'd say, but this particular, you mean do yourself a favor and check out this picture if you haven't seen it already. I mean, it looks like The Rock as a monkey, maybe. I think that's, would you say that's close? Maybe. I mean, I don't want to, I mean, The Rock is a big guy, is what I'm saying. And so is this monkey.
Well, I think you need to go with Maybe it's Gina Carano. I'm trying to think of some bigger women. Since it's a female monkey.
Okay.
Gotta right. make sure we get the proper sex for...
Yeah, I gotta get the gender situation under control here. I don't know. I would say that this monkey is bigger than China.
Yeah, you may call her the ninth wonder of the world.
I would. And according to this article, the monkey is actually bigger than the other monkeys that they have in the exhibit, and they also appeared to be frightened of it, which is not surprising.
No. I am not surprised either.
I would be frightened of it, even though it is, you know, smaller than a chimp, I think, but still, it looks like it could swing those fists around and do some damage, or probably rip your face off if it felt like it. So, if you're going to Finland, see if you can spot this monkey.
Well, Ken, I know that you will not be able to spot the beer we had. This was a special one that I got from Pretentious Beer Barrel House right here in the fine city of Columbus, Ohio. I am pulling up additional pertinent information, but I got it in a bottle. It's an American sour. It's called Exaltation.
Hmm.
And do you drink a whole lot of sours?
I have to say I'm not the hugest sour fan, but this was probably a good example of a sour for me. Like, I not that I'm saying I'm still going to be drinking a lot of sours, but I could see a little. This reminded me a little bit more of like a, I don't know, Sour Patch Kid or something. Like, I could get more of a familiar sour taste for this one for some reason.
Yeah, it. They just in general seem to have. I don't know if my palate is completely okay with sours now, or if they just have better sours than everyone else.
Mm.
Like, they really have kind of... there's another one that they have with lime and cucumber that I love.
Oh.
And this one, I don't think is quite as good as the one with the... I think it was Cyberite with lime and cucumber was out of this world tasty. Yeah. This one is really good, though. You know, it's yeah. I'm glad I bought it. I bought it quite a while ago, and I'm glad I finally got a chance to break it out here.
Yeah, that sounds lime and cucumber sounds really good too. So now I'm kind of curious about that, but I'll try that out a different time. But yeah, if you're into sours, you could do a lot worse, I think.
Yeah. So if you come to Columbus and you like sours, I definitely highly recommend Pretentious Barrel House. I would also recommend that you do not attend in the later hours. Go there when it's nice and sunny out. Let's just say it's not in the best part of Columbus.
Oh.
So we will leave it at that. I'm at Frango11. That's at Gozer33. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to us. And have a good night.
See ya.